With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Hello there, I'm Chuck Todd. This is the Chuck Toddcast. So this week, leaked documents show that the Supreme Court is poised to overturn abortion rights, leaving each state to decide regulations on its own terms. For some, this means even cases of rape or incest, abortion could be illegal, which means all in the course of just one day. The midterms are set against a totally new backdrop. I say potentially because this is a draft opinion. Midterms are typically when voters show little energy, but this just might add some. So with me today, discuss sort of what could happen here to the midterms and campaign strategies that could change on the fly. Democratic political strategist and former president of Emily's List, Stephanie Shriok, and Matt Gorman, a Republican strategist and vice president for Targeted Victory, former strategist over at the NRSC. So, Stephanie, let me ask you, did we just Control-Alt-Delete the midterms?
I like that. That's good. I got to say, you know, here's the thing about the situation. We've seen it in lots of our research along the way, that nobody believed that this was going to happen. Like, they just couldn't get there. Like, it just wasn't going to happen. I've been in focus groups where folks are like, oh, no, they always talk about it. Like, they right. cry wolf. It's never going to happen, And we have, of course, been like, this has literally been the plan for 49 years. And they've got the court for it. They've been moving literally thousands of pieces of legislation at the state level to get to the court piece by piece over the last, you know, particularly the last 12 years. So yes, this is the plan. And so now, yeah, I think we have a completely different midterm situation. It was one many of us were expecting, because we were expecting this ruling. I will say we did not expect it to be leaked for the first time in modern history,
right.
But we were expecting it. And now it's, you know, it's our job to make sure that everybody in this country, women and men, know exactly what it means and what it means for them in their states, and what it could potentially mean when they have more Republican legislatures who are ready to get rid of access to abortion care.
Matt, same question. Do you accept the premise that we may have just reset the midterms?
Maybe we didn't control delete it. Maybe we just added another tab. But Stephanie's right to a point. It was always kind of out there, right? Like, we knew the court took up this case, but it wasn't really
people following the issue kind of knew where we were going. But yeah, the general public, I think Stephanie's right. You could feel it in the polling. Nobody really believed we're never getting rid of abortion rights, right?
And it was one of those things, right? It was something that every Republican campaign and talked about. You know, I was reading Politico today, and they, even some, you know, kind of Democrats, whether it's Susan Wild, who's a member in a vulnerable seat kind of in Bucks County, she's kind of skeptical. And look, my advice to Republicans would be, look, don't get caught up in this. Inflation and cost of living is still going to be the number one issue. I mean, we saw, you know, Terry McAuliffe, I think in those last weeks, try to talk about Texas and that law in the Virginia race. And it turned out folks that voted on abortion voted for Youngkin. But one similar thing, I was thinking about this the last couple of days. It reminds me a little bit of 2018 with guns after Parkland, where it really wasn't an issue, but you did see it pop a little bit in certain districts like Northern Virginia, a little bit in New York, these suburban districts. And it went from, you know, not really being on the radar to maybe third or a distant second. I could see that happening here. You might see some ads, but I'm not sure it's going to be defined.
Oh, Matt, I disagree.
Not surprising.
I know. I appreciate it.
I didn't bring you guys on.
Congresswoman Wild also said we can walk and chew gum at the same time. that we're going to be able to deal and talk about the economic issues. And we can also talk about the fact that women are going to be losing a freedom in this country, an ability to make their own choices in so many states. This is unlike the terrible moment around Parkland. And yes, you're totally right. That played in some districts and not in other districts, and it did mobilize some folks. This is going to affect everybody. But to Chuck's point earlier, folks, one, did not believe it was going to happen, and two, still don't really know exactly what it means, because it's a little bit complicated, right? It depends on what state. It just went. It's going to go.
It will depend on where you live,
and it depends on where you live. Yeah. But it also depends in November who your legislators are. Mm-hmm. So that can change like that. So, you know, if we lose the governorships as Democrats and Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota, we probably just lost access to abortion care in those states.
This gets me actually, Stephanie, I want to build on this. More so than Senate races, do you think this really transforms governor's races more so than Senate races?
I think it is. I think it actually does both in a huge, big way. Mm-hmm. And it really focuses people on the legislatures as well. So we've been talking about this for years. So folks right. sort of overlook their legislatures.
You mean the Democratic Party might care about state legislatures?
And they've gotten better.
Surprising to me.
They've gotten better. But they're going to hyper-focus on it now. And yes, I do think it definitely changes those gubernatorial races dramatically. But it is so clear what has happened. And it is, I mean, you are telling women, particularly the women who are going to ultimately, I believe, decide this election, which are the 50 plus, which I'm about to be in. I'm
already here, Stephanie.
Oh, I just joined. I know. I forgot.
How's that feel, guys?
I'm so much younger than you, Chuck. I'm so much
obviously,
younger.
Obviously.
that is the 50 plus, and it is those generations of women who really truly remember everything that they've been through or know the stories of their mothers and grandmothers. And they're the ones that are going to get riled up here. And that changes the entire dynamic of the electorate. It's going to make the electorate bigger, which is going to be a positive thing for a lot of governorships, legislators, I mean, House candidates, and these Senate races, because the Senate's going to get held accountable too, because they delivered that court.
Right. You know, Matt, not to play the age card on you, but when Steffi and I first start getting into politics, there was a lot of nuanced Republican positions. You had degrees, you had pro-choice Republicans like Tom Ridge. You'd have Republicans who would say, I'm pro-life, definitely no late-term abortions, but I believe in exceptions for health life. And there was, it was accepted to have of those. And then in the last decade, I'd argue it's been harder for a Republican to have a nuanced position on abortion, in because of the activist community, sort of it got more black and white. I guess I'm guessing you don't accept that framing per se.
No, you know, I don't. And I was thinking about this too. You know, you look at Susan Collins, you look at Murkowski. They were the
kind of outliers, though.
But okay, but hold on. Compared to whom in the Democratic Party? Former Congressman Dan Lipinski? Former Congressman?
No, you're not wrong. Look, the pro-life Democratic caucus has shrunk as fast as the pro-choice
caucus. If it's non-existent. And I think also you look, I mean, they introduced a bill to codify Roe. And I think it's also important to note that how many tens of millions of dollars spent on behalf of Susan Collins to get her back in the Senate. And Murkowski is endorsed by, you know, NRSC and Rick Scott, and I'm sure they're going to spend more money on her. So I think there is a broader position. I mean, heck, you look at the governors. If you want to talk governors, you got Sununu, and who's, you know, going to win 70% of the vote again in New Hampshire. The Mitch McConnell and his team wanted him in the Senate, wanted him to run. Same with Larry Hogan. So I'm not sure I accept that premise on that.
Okay, but I guess the thing I'm wondering is whether there is going to be room, whether these folks feel like they can have room. I mean, I look, you singled out who you singled out, but when you look at these active Senate races and these active and these battleground governors races, there isn't a lot of nuance.
And again, I think
are those folks gonna? Do we trust? And I hope I can trust Murkowski and Collins to codify Roe. Are they going to take that vote in their caucus?
They introduced it. They introduced it, right? That was the bill they introduced. And so again, I mean, we talked before. This has been the position for 40 years. Whether you think it was going to happen or not, I mean, this has kind of been where folks are going. The fact that it's happening regardless. It's the position that they've had, and I think also I actually think in some way the leak from political standpoint can help Republicans a bit, right? Because when this comes down officially, if it's the actual what we see as written from February that Alito wrote, it takes some of the air out of the balloon. If it isn't, let's say, I think it could, just as be as likely that Roberts goes and crafts a 6-3 where he's writing it with, Mississippi is a 15 ban, which, look, I saw a poll, it was 54-41 in support of that. Then it looks a little, more reasonable in the eye of the beholder. So I think this could have helped.
Well, Stephanie, I actually want to, this is a theory that actually got posited in my call just a few minutes ago, which is, hey, maybe this leak came from the right in order to, so that when they see, that was an extreme version, and then what comes won't look as bad, and it will dial down the intensity quite a bit. Now, there's a lot of conspiracy theories about the motivation of the leak. We're going to find out it's probably some outside custodian who just decided to pass. It'll end up being something that none of us have posited here. But if this turns out to not be the ruling and Roberts crafts basically a new Roe, where you have a Dobbs amendment, a Dobbs addendum, the way we've had a Casey addendum, and 15 weeks is a new viability. And Matt's right. I've seen the polling on that. That is more evenly divided. Where does the issue go if that is the ruling?
Well, first off, there are hundreds of cases on their way up that are more and more extreme, and this court's going to make more and more of those decisions. But here, first off, okay, I'm not a lawyer, and I'm definitely not a constitutional lawyer. Boy, talk about a Supreme Court that is already in trouble for having a leak, and right, then they're going to completely change that decision. I don't buy it. I don't buy it.
That could upset everybody. By the way, that could upset everybody. Both sides of the left and right.
I don't know what that is. That would be, oh my God. So I can't even imagine that happening.
I kind of with you, Stephanie. I'd be stunned. I think as bad as the court's credibility is right now, it would be worse if this is not the opinion.
I agree. I think it would be devastating for them. Just devastating. But here's the other piece of it. What I also don't understand, and I don't know, maybe if it has any constitutional lawyers on this call here, on this podcast. But
no, I only play when I'm television.
No,
right, exactly.
I have less than loans.
So you go with this ban or this 15 week situation, which is troubling and difficult for a lot of women in this country. Doesn't that just mean the state gets to decide? And then therefore you get rid of Roe. See, that's what I've never understood any argument of, it's just going to be a 15 week and they're going to settle on that. I don't think that's the case anymore. Once you agree with that, you say the state gets to decide. And every state then is going to just move forward like Roe is gone, because Roe will be gone. Roe will be gone as soon as they hand it to the states, and then those states are going to move fast, and a lot of them are going to have to decide if the trigger laws that they've already got in place, 13 of them, are ready to boom, get rid of it right off the bat, if that's enough. But if you say, yes, Mississippi gets to do that, don't you then get to say, well, then every state gets to do what they want to do? I don't know. I've never understood. To me, Roe's dead.
I think you're not wrong, which is probably why Roberts has had a hard time winning over Brett Kavanaugh on this argument.
I think that's right. And I don't want to lose, we can talk, political tactics and legal tactics here. We already have women who are having to fly or drive 1,400 miles to get abortion care. They are struggling already. The costs are immense. Let us not lose fact that we are already rolling back by decades. And this is only going to make it really, really bad. And it's been 50 years, basically, that folks didn't live with this and understand this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for those of us who do remember those particular stories, because I grew up entirely under Roe, the stories are terrible. What women go through to protect their families and their lives and their futures is really, really rough. And we are rolling into an environment that we're going to be sending women back 50 years. And don't think this is the other thing. This is just not the only domino that's going to fall. I mean, I've heard folks talk about getting rid of Griswold, which mm-hmm. if folks, you know anything about that case, which of course is the birth control case.
Right.
And I remember when I started at Emily's List, and Chuck, I think I even talked to you about this, is the old guard ladies, the women whose shoulders I stand upon in the movement, mm-hmm. they're like, Stephanie, they're going after birth control. And I was like, that's crazy. They're never going to go after birth control.
Yeah, I used to think, Matt, I do think that this the issue of birth control of where this is going, particularly IUDs, and the day and the morning after pill, it's going to be interesting. Do you think a Republican can be for those things and be pro-life?
Well,
be accepted as pro-life.
A couple things. I if you remember Romney in 12, kind of
right.
shut that down with George Stephanopoulos in the ABC debate years back. I think, though, if the Alito opinion, as I read it, was very strict, because I think he was very clear, it doesn't deal with Obergefell, doesn't deal with Griswold. He views it because Roe deals with
Bush said
like.
The same thing. I understand. Well, but go ahead. You finish it.
No, no. Yeah. I think just 2 points kind of going back. I think, number one, I think if you look at the history with Roberts caring about kind of what he views as the integrity of the court, if there was anyone to see, like he did with NFIB at the Obamacare case, to step in and figure it out and kind of try and save something, it would be mm-hmm. him. One other point that I keep thinking about, I find it just fascinating that Alito wrote this and not Clarence Thomas, because if he would have the chance to write it as senior justice in the majority.
Instead, he assigned it. Yeah.
Exactly. And I don't know. I just keep coming back to that. I feel like this would be kind of Clarence Thomas's magnum opus if this were kind
but
of.
But Alito's had more passion about it. Alito's had more passion about
yeah,
it.
Yeah. I think it depends. And again, maybe that's the draft. And maybe Clarence Thomas is famous for his concurrences with that, too. I think also from a political tactical perspective, I've seen this. On kind of the down ballot level, and I think we can't discount it. A lot of House and Senate candidates are very clumsy with their language. Democratic candidates are clumsy with their language and how they talk about it, because what they say is that they will not restrict a woman's right to choose. So what we have done, I saw these ads firsthand when we were doing the NRCC. We say, okay, then we can run ads saying that you accept it to the moment of birth, you accept a determined sex of the child, you accept it if it was found to be Down syndrome, and on and on and on. And that, again, lets us go on offense. I'm not saying we fight that. Again, I want to hit this hard, that inflation of cost of living is going to be the issue. But if someone really wants to fight on that, there is a way to go on offense with it.
Let me pause there. We'll be right back after a quick break. You're listening to the Chuck Toddcast from Meet the Press.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Well, look, I do think, look, the economy is not going to not be the number one issue. I think we all, considering the situation with inflation, hard stop. In a midterm election, you can have a single issue become a motivating factor. So I accept both premises. In fact, the issue that I actually think is going to get pushed out of the headlines a bit is immigration. Because I think those independent voters that look like Republicans on immigration are the same group of voters, I assume, Stephanie, that Democrats are going after. I mean, basically, when you look at the swing voter in America is either a non-college educated woman or a college educated man, right? And they're the swing vote these days on a lot of issues, and particularly on this one, would be my guess when we see the poll.
I mean, on the swing voters who are going to vote, and then you've got the, you know, it's a midterm. So part of our job is to get people to vote because the turnout's always a little bit lower.
Let's be realistic, Stephanie. Before Monday, Democrats were not fired up about doing much. I mean, the base was pretty. It was in a pretty bad mood. This is, you know, I do think our politics are defined these days by what fear, not hope, left and right. And if you've got fear on your side, you usually have a winning message. Democrats 2018 and 2020, Republicans right now 2022 and 2016, both with fear messaging.
Yeah, that's how this is why these elections roll like they do, sort of the historic trends of these elections. But then you have moments that drive out the other side. And what is, you know, I look at that governor's race in Virginia, and what's really interesting about that governor's race is that Terry McAuliffe got more votes than Northam in his winning election. Right, like right. The turnout was really high. It's really high on both sides. We could be looking at a midterm election that has extraordinarily high turnout, which is going to make it very interesting and very, very different from our typical midterms where you usually have one, you know, the party out of the White House wants to go get them, and the other party's like, we're in the White House, yay. I think we've got a different environment right now, and I think we're looking at high turnout elections. So is it something in between 18 and 20?
Right, what does that mean?
Where does that go? Yeah. You know, that's the interesting thing, and who's coming out. And I have no doubts. Matt obviously probably knows better on these numbers, but I have no doubts that the right are going to vote. Like they're riled up and ready to go.
They're fired up.
But I got to say this: when we need women to get riled up and vote, this is going to be a major issue to do just that, because you are taking away a freedom, a right of women. And once we make that clear to everybody, which we got to do, because here's the thing, people aren't watching that much news. They're not, I hate to say, I mean, I love watching.
No, the numbers are way down.
But I mean, I've talked to family members. I'm like, did you hear what happened? Nobody knows what happens. My dad missed it. He catches everything. I mean, so we got to understand there's going to be a lot of education going on. There's going to be a lot of ads in a lot of places.
Stephanie,
explaining
address
this
Matt,
and talking about this.
Address Matt's, you know, is there, because that is what you're going to see, is some Republicans are basically going to say, hey, that Democrat wants abortion on demand. Is that an effective counter?
No, I don't think it is, ultimately, because we are now in a place that would be in a moment where, well, there's other options. But now we're talking about there's no options. There's nowhere to go. So we are now dealing with a world where we're just going to say, the Republican, when I say we, I mean Emily's List, Planned Parenthood, NARAL, how all will come together with a $150 million plan before the leak came out. So you can imagine where this is going to go. All of these Democratic senators, the governors, everybody, the legislators who control this stuff, they all know that they've got the power to make the decision to move to either protect women or not. And this isn't just a women's issue. I mean, Roe is supported by over 70% of the country. In fact, it's close to 80%. This is a different ball game than we've seen, because nobody ever thought we would be here.
And Matt, I think that's the lesson here, is that the party that sort of the public always seems to pull back the party that goes too far in abortion.
You know, well, I guess to the point is I have a hard time if the 15-week ban is, again, 13 points above water, according to a Fox News poll that came out May 1. I have a hard time believing that abortion on demand isn't higher than that, right? I have a hard time kind of believing that.
Right, but no abortion, but then no abortion is a whole nother story.
And again, that's why I said, like, again, this will be fought on the economy, but if we want to have the argument about abortion, like, Republicans have a way to go on offense with that. And I guess kind of that larger point I see to your original question is, if this is going to be fought, also, where is it going to be fought? Is it going to be are the cluster of the voters that really it affects are in these blue states? I mean, as we saw in Virginia, we talk about turnout. Youngkin got more turnout than Donald Trump in some of these rural areas.
Fired up rural areas.
Right. And look, I think some in our party, think that we can't win with higher turnout. Youngkin kind of put that on its head. And so I think if that trend kind of follows, we should lean into that and we shouldn't be afraid of that.
I'll tell you this. There is one state that I am that is going to be sort of ground zero. And it's like of all states, do you realize that Wisconsin is one of these states that has a total ban on the books? And we all know how polarized that state is. I mean, if there is going to be any state that this is sort of where we're going to learn a lot, here's a battleground state where everything is going to be thrown into it, where every state election is going to matter on this. And knowing how polar, I mean, I do think we have our Petri dish, and it's the state of Wisconsin.
I don't disagree.
And you've already got Ron Johnson underwater there. You've got a very
governor with the economy. He's struggling. Right.
And at least, holding his own on education and some other issues. But yeah, this was a battleground state to begin with. I agree with you on that state. It is going to be very, very interesting.
I'll be very curious to see how the Met. What works there and what
you,
what
you kind of have a confluence of factors, right? Because we can go on offense on Evers. He is not a very charismatic guy. I think he's kind of like the old avuncular grandpa. We have Clayfish, who's pretty, obviously young, former lieutenant governor. And you have kind of this Ron John Mandela Barnes race where, look, I think everybody counted about in 16 with Ron John.
Nobody thought that guy.
Yeah.
No, you can't count him out. I agree.
You can't count him out. And you have Mandela, who I think, has taken, who is the further left one in that primary when you have Lazary and other ones who are, have a little bit more mainstream position. So I don't disagree. I think the Petri dish will be kind of interesting. I don't believe there's many, I'm trying to jog my NRCC memory, but this might be the new maps. I don't believe there's a ton of true swing districts.
Not in the House.
Yeah.
No, they pretty evenly divide. Yeah.
Pretty evenly. Right. Yeah. And they're both. Right.
I think it's going to be
governor's
legislative races too.
Yeah.
I mean, everything is going to be.
Yeah, the legislature's fairly gerrymandered by the Republicans, so that's a little tougher. But you do have some really interesting races there, and I don't think we know who's coming out of some of these primaries. We do not know who's coming out of the Republican primary in that governor's race, and that could really change that dynamic. And you've got a number of people in the Senate race with Mandela Barnes in the lead, but Sarah Godlewski should not be counted out yet by any means. She's moving. She's starting to move.
A candidate that, as Matt Gorman knows, because he came into our bureau to do this, who was just meeting with my political unit just a few minutes ago.
Oh, really?
Actually. So we met with all three. Yeah.
So, excellent.
So I don't know if Matt knew that. Yeah.
No, I didn't.
Yes, I was going to bring her up. I'm going to spin a close with this and see if you guys disagree. I do think the great unintended consequence of this is for 35 years, Steffi and I have watched a whole bunch of candidates basically be able to duck specifics on abortion, whether you were for abortion rights or against abortion rights, because you could always just sort of lean on Roe. Everybody's going to have a specific answer now on abortion. If you don't want a total ban or a total legality and you're somewhere in the middle, you now have to articulate it. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how candidates handle that, because candidates haven't had to do that in their lifetime.
I mean, look, maybe it's just me, kind of the insular DC thing, but like, I would always make sure that my candidates had an answer. I mean, look, whether it's exceptions, you know,
and then you kind of get the mission. Wasn't that important because voters didn't take the answer very seriously.
But if you said though that you weren't for exceptions, that was used how many times in ads against, you know, so you have those exceptions. And again, there's of that middle where you could, there's a ton of things.
Every state had its own middle.
Every had its own middle. Yeah. But that was always kind of standard for me.
Yeah, but Matt, we've had so many legislatures, Republican-led legislatures, move legislation and ultimately laws in some of these places where there's actually Republican governors that is bans, no exceptions, or bans, one exception, zero. And so here's the Republicans' problem. They have too many states who have said, no way, not here, never. Oh, and you can't even cross the border. Or if somebody else helps you, we're gonna take
Missouri
you down.
Law.
Yeah. They have gone way too far in these legislatures, and every Republican's gonna have to answer to that. Because that is the bigger problem. And I don't care what Republican you are, where you live, if you're in a blue state Republican, you're gonna have to answer to that. And then
I will say this:
the activists around it, and Susan B. Anthony list has already come out. They want a national ban. That's what they're going to do at the federal level, is a national ban. So there you go.
To back up Matt's point here, that a lot of Republicans are more wait and see. I was just reading a transcript this morning of Joni Ernst doing Hugh Hewitt's show, and she's in the, well, let's wait to see what the full opinion says.
Yeah. Right.
But it tells me that even she's not ready to stake out the Alito position just yet.
There's no reason to. There's no reason to, because again, why? It's a February draft, and I think that's. I would advise my candidates
to do that too.
I would absolutely do that, because again, Robert steps in, and it's 15 weeks, which is by 13 points. Then why are you already staying in that position? Wait and see.
And get somebody though. Robert has to pull somebody.
But if Robert steps in, he can write the opinion. I think almost any Republican or conservative on that court would rather have that than Roberts than not. So that's the way they get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
It's going to be.
It's an interesting tell, though. That's all.
It's also not the end of it, because we could.
We could keep going, but then we'd still never resolve. You guys, appreciate it. We'll see if it is a full control alt delete, but I'm glad you like my little metaphor.
That was good.
Stephanie and Matt, always a pleasure. Thank you both.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Take care.
You've been listening to the Chuck Toddcast from Meet the Press. Today's episode was produced by Justice Gopin Green and Matt Rivera. Our theme music composed by Spoke Media. You can catch Meet the Press daily on MSNBC every day at 1 p.m. Eastern. Meet the Press Reports is on demand on Peacock. Big show's available every Sunday morning on any platform that carries NBC programming. Thanks for listening to the upload.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.